You're listening to Jungle Janna Radio with Jungle Janna and Angel Garcia, only on LA Talk Radio.
To Jungle Janna Radio Show this day. We've got myself and we've got Blondie, my dearest friend from the Osa Peninsula in Costa Rica, and Randall Larouse, who is going to give us some great information about what's going on in the Gulf of Dulce and what's going on in Isla de Cocos. And we're about to do some great, exciting. There he is. There's Randall. Hey, Randall.
Getting something to drink, so excuse me.
No, that's what I got. I have my water. I want to welcome everybody to Jungle Janna Radio Show. And Blondie's co-hosting with you today because Josh is off doing whale and dolphin tours today.
Nice.
And I guess, so Randall, before we get started in the show, tell me, I can say it, but I want you to tell everybody how special the Gulf of Dulce is. Because they have whales coming from both the northern and southern hemisphere, and right now it's the southern hemisphere whales there.
Right. Well, it's important from many aspects. You know, one of them is just the physics of it all. You know, the Golfo Dulce is a reverse estuary, as they call it. It's deeper in the middle than it is in the mouth. So usually the estuaries, like the one in Punta Arenas, with every tide, the whole water gets flushed. That doesn't happen in the Golfo Dulce. Since it's deeper in the middle than it is at the mouth, there's a lot of water that stays in there. So there's not a complete water exchange with the tide change. And that creates some special conditions as well. Like it's anoxic in the deep waters around the middle. But it's very productive. And in the past, it's been one of the main food sources for, you know, small-scale fisheries in the country.
Okay. And about the whales, isn't it the only place in the world where both whales from the northern and southern cohabitate?
Well, no, there's a region here in Central America, you know, like Panama, Costa Rica, Nicaragua. It's a big region where, you know, in Central America, where both of these populations, you know, merge. Different times of the year, though, but they're using the same habitat. You can kind of like see the niche partitioning there with the different seasons, right?
Okay, so Blondie's a scuba diver, and I brought her on today. And Janina's going to come on next week, and I hope you'll come back, Randall, to talk about your adventures in Isla de Cocos, which I have signed up and put my deposit down. I'm going.
All right.
I can't wait.
That's going to be really fun, you know, doing the live transmissions from Cocos Island, like in the late afternoon.
I know.
And everybody's chilling. And
so they have Starlink, Sam, and I'm talking to the owner now of LA Talk Radio. They have Starlink, and we want to do some special broadcast from Cocos Island while all that's going down. That's going to be so fun.
It'll be really fun because we're going to come out of the dives, you know, all jazzed, you know, what we saw. Whoa, you know, so we're going to be ready to grab that mic and share our experience.
Well, so I'm going to ask you a question. So I have never done nitrox, and I know I can get ready with nitrox when I go out on the tour with you, go out on the expedition with you. But I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and they want to come maybe in this next, not this one, but the next time. He does nitrox, and he's telling me that you have more energy and you don't get tired as easy. It's a really good thing for deep dives. Is that correct?
Well, the best thing one of the main reasons for using nitrox is because we're at Cocos Island for 7 days doing 3 dives a day, and the nitrogen really builds up. And after, like, normally, like, if you're just diving on air and you do two dives in a day, or the next day you do a couple of dives, you're okay. But after 3 or 4 days, your body starts aching because of the nitrogen, and you feel tired. And after day 6 or 7 of 3 days of dive on air, You know, your body starts resenting it. But with the nitrox, you're more energized. You don't get as tired. But then there's one limitation with nitrox. You can't go down as deep. And I always wonder why it's called nitrox, because nitrox sounds like nitrogen, but really nitrox is air that has higher air concentration than normal. I mean, higher oxygen concentration than normal air. Air usually has 22% or has 22% oxygen. With nitrox, you get 10% more oxygen. So that way you don't get as much nitrogen accumulation. But if you go back to your scuba diving classes, the deeper you go, the more you absorb oxygen. And oxygen can be dangerous at high levels as well. So when you're diving on nitrox, you're not supposed to go below 25 or 30 meters. If you want to go any deeper than that, you must use normal air instead of nitrox.
So I did not. So I'm going on this trip with you, right? And I have one question to ask. I'm going to ask it live on air. You can say yes or no. I want to dive with you.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You're going to be on our team.
Diving with you. Because, you know, you're the reason I started. You remember Bill McDonald? He was on the Calypso for 23 years with Cousteau's. And he came to Costa Rica. And when he wanted to come and dive from Isla de Caño all the way and do a film. And so I dove with him for 6 weeks. And we dove constantly. And he's the one who really taught me how to. I mean, I was already advanced when he got there, but it was just too advanced. And I'll be honest, I haven't been diving a lot in the last few years, but I have been diving at Caño. I went 3 days with Carlos Daniel, and he goes, "Why would you come here in the rainy season last year?" And I said, "Because I can do the easy stuff. I wanted to get pushed back into the hard diving in the rainy season of Isla de Caño so I could get it back really fast." And in 3 days, he's like, "Thumbs up, you're doing good."
Yeah, it's like riding a bike. No, I always tell people that if you're a good swimmer, you're good at diving. You're fine.
I'm a really good swimmer. I'm a rescue diver, and I'm an advanced diver, but it's been a while. I did dive the Great Barrier Reef in November last year. That's the last time I went diving, but it was fine. And the Great Barrier Reef's a piece of cake. It's not a hard dive.
And I just now said we're going to be diving with you, and I probably will most of the dives. The thing is, just to give you, the heads up or the startup, whatever you call it. I'm sharing this trip with another guy from Sherwood Scuba. So, you know, we were supposed to do half and half. But one of the reasons why we're scrambling to get our last clients is because he had trouble selling his slots. So I'm getting more people. And usually what this would have meant was I would have had my group and he would have had his. But now I'm getting people to fill up his slots. And of course, whenever I sell slots, you know, people want to come with me.
So, yeah, I know. But yeah, they're still going with you, right?
Yeah, we'll do some shifting around, but you know, I'll be, you know, ahead of most of the group most of the time. So
are you going to be giving some discounted rates on the last ones to fill up for him?
Oh yes, definitely. We have a super discounted rate because see the way, just so everybody knows this, you know, like, the way they treat me in these dive companies, Okeanos and Sea Hunter as well, they treat me like a tour agent. So they do give me a discounted rate if I charter the whole boat. They give me a break there. And then they treat me like a tour agent. So they give me a break, and then I'm supposed to sell the slots at the rate that they have announced on their website. And that means I get a 20% commission. So if I was a tour company and I sold one of these trips, I would make $15,000 or $20,000 profit. But, of course, I don't want to make a profit. I need to go to Cocos Island. I need to get my tags out. I need to get the research done because that means I have products to show to my funders and the money keeps on coming. So my goal of going to Cocos Island is breaking even. If I can make a profit, whatever, yay. But, like, right now I just need to break even so we can get out there and get the job done.
So all this money is going to research on Cocos Island.
And well, like I said, the commission that they give me should go for that. But really what I tell people, like when you check my website, it says sponsor a scientific expedition to Cocos Island because you're the way I get out there. If it wasn't for people like you, imagine an NGO like mine, I would have to pay $100,000 for a chartered boat to go do my research. That's, you know, only if I was National Geographic, I could do that. But what I do is I charter these boats. And then I get out to Cocos Island, I get the work done, I bring people like you, I create awareness, and then the word spreads, and then every now and then I get a check for $100 or $300, you know, people have been on the trips and they get, you know, they get involved, you know, and they hear the talks in the evenings, you know, and hopefully the people keep on supporting us, because when you come with us to Cocos Island, you're not just coming to dive, you're coming to learn about the research we do and also about the policy, because one of my biggest things is, you know, or one of my outstanding works is, you know, I try to be the best biologist I can, but we're more well known for turning that science into policy, the impact, getting in politicians' faces, going to meetings and saying, you know, here's this great science we have, but the science by itself ain't going to do nothing. We got to go out there and push the science. And that's when people like you, normal citizens, really give us a hand by, you know, pushing these agendas and making sure that politicians hear us.
So I want to introduce you to Blondie. She's on the show with me today because Josh is out doing whale and dolphin tours. Blondie has an interesting story. How she learned how to scuba dive in the Osa Peninsula on the fly. And I guess you can say it now. Tell us your little story right quick because it's hilarious.
Oh, boy. You can hear me, correct?
Sure.
Yes.
Okay. So there was a new guy moved down to the Osa. He was not just any dive instructor, but he was highly experienced. He worked for the U.S. government. He did rescue government, all kinds of, you know, major dive. So he moved down to the Osa and he started a dive school.
And how long ago was that?
Oh,
30 years?
April 2004.
Okay.
I remember exactly when it was. Oh, gosh.
So, it wasn't Francisco Nistri, was it? Francisco Nistri?
No. He was actually from California.
Okay.
I had been wanting to take dives, but there was no one local, none. You could go to Drake Bay, but even back then, there were, I think, Pirate Cove, and I send lots of people to Pirate Cove, Drake Bay. But anyway, so he started a dive school. Four of us signed up. But to date, we're still the only four who were certified in the Gulf of Dual Set.
Was John Podson one of them?
Yes, John Paulson, super sweet. Okay. Yes, it was hilarious. So at any, and I was the only girl, and I'm not a snorkeler. It took me a few to get, you know, I got beneath my nose about an inch and just about panicked. And I'm just a regular person. I'm not a scientist, a diver, or any of that. I tell you though, once I got down there, it's a whole.
See, that's how I feel. Once I went down and got under the water, it was like this is 2/3 of the planet or more. This is like the most of the planet. I don't even know this world, and I got addicted.
I you know, Jana, I am one of these shiny girl things. Oh, look at this! Oh, there. I mean, I there's so much in the world that's so interesting that I just want to look at all of it. But when I am so meditating, in other words, it's a tough one for me.
Well, I want to go. I'm going to go on this trip in September, but I want to go. I want to go again, probably is it August you do it again, Randall?
August next year.
I'm probably going to get addicted. Cocos Island has been my bucket list since I learned how to dive, and I can't even. And you know, and when I had Rainforest Radio. Randall was always the guy, the president's speaking. He'd go do the interviews, and I've known him for a long time, but to be able to go with you to Isla de Cocos is my dream list, and I cannot wait, and I'm probably going to go again, and I have somebody we'll talk about later who wants to do a film on you.
All right.
We're going to talk about it all. So, Randall, tell me how people talking about your brother-in-law, Sam. We're going to take a quick break if you can. Could you find that, Sam, that we can play that little video?
Thank you.
That's awesome. Do you know how many times I've watched that Randall in my house on my phone?
I have a little question.
Go ahead, Randall.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. Well, okay. I've hardly done any diving on the Osa Peninsula. Of course, I've been to Caño Island quite a bit. But I remember I used to do sea turtles in Punta Banco. And it was very rocky out there. Have you ever done any diving around Punta Banco, those rock areas?
No, I have not. I've done Isla Tortuga. Here's what happened. I got Isla Tortuga, and I lied about how many dives I had. The dive master, the guy who went diving with us, got bit by a moray eel, and he was going to drop his weight belt way down the lake, and I saved him. I said, no, don't drop it. I put his hand around, one hand around his other hand. Are y'all getting feedback?
There's some feedback there. Is somebody's mic on or something?
Okay. Anyway, I got him up to the top. I put him into the boat. That's what I said after eight dives. I think I need to get my rescue and my advance. Same to do. And Francisco Nisto was on the phone when I landed when I got to shore. He was already calling. He'd already heard. You need to get your advance and your rescue.
But to answer your question, no, I have not been there. I've done a lot of diving around, not a lot. I've done some diving around the rock in Matapalo on the Osa Peninsula, and then up in Mogos. There's two areas. There's you know the rock in Mogos, right, Jana?
That's why they call it Mogos, the little islita.
Yeah, that's beautiful there. But the rock at Matapalo is really tough. There is a current.
Yeah.
That is so strong, but I tell you what, it's incredible diving on that under that rock.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. I'm planning on doing some more work down there, but you know, I want to tag some sharks there and see where they're going. If they're going to Cocos Island or Panama, and I plan on doing some work around there, so I should probably ask.
Any particular species of shark? Or in general, just.
Well, we're really interested in the manta rays, the hammerheads, and the thresher sharks. And now we also have interest in the bull sharks, which is more recent. You know, the bull sharks aren't migrating throughout the eastern Pacific, but they are migrating around the coastal waters. And we've already done some detections from bull sharks that are moving from estuaries up in Guanacaste, and they go down to Cabo Blanco, which is, I guess, kind of like Matapalo, the exposed tip of the southern Nicoya Peninsula. And we're wondering about the bull sharks in the whole region. So we're planning on doing more work on bull sharks. So we can do the coastal connectivity. You know, we've been working a lot with the oceanic connectivity, Cocos, Galapagos, you know, the islands out there. And now we're also focusing on the swimway or the corridor between Cocos Island and the Osa Peninsula. And the thing is, you know, there's a mountain chain that goes from Cocos Island to the Osa Peninsula, and we're figuring out that the highly migratory animals are running up and down that mountain range. So we already have evidence of a sea turtle did that movement from Cocos Island to Galapagos in 2 weeks, which isn't bad. Manta ray last August, and it went from Cocos Island to the Osa Peninsula in only 5 days. That's like 100 kilometers.
Insane. That's crazy. You know, when I first was in Mogos, we had a house overlooking the Mogos. And I just got there. It was like 93. And I'm looking out over there. And I'm like, a whale tail came up. I didn't know there were whales there. And then it wasn't long. And I'm down in a little ponga with this guy named El Tigre. I don't know if you heard El Tigre. I've been there forever and ever. He took me out, taught me how to fish with the line. You know, how they throw it out. And, I saw hammerheads, all these baby hammerheads around there. Tiny hammerheads around the Mogos. I'm like, oh my gosh. And it's just been, so then I just got all the books. I got all the bird books, ocean books, like all the books. And I started studying to know exactly what was there. It's insane. Nice.
Yeah, I haven't really been much to the Osa or to the Golfo Dulce. I've done most of my work up in Guanacaste. But, you know, like I said, we're getting more and more interested in that area because of the movements of these animals that are coming in from Cocos, and they're apparently like their launching pad is right there on at the Osa Peninsula.
So there's a connectivity between the Gulf of Dulce, Isla de Cocos, and Galapagos and Malpelo?
Galapagos, yeah, because, well, probably not Malpelo directly, but the thing is, there's a mountain range that goes all the way from the Osa to Cocos and to Galapagos. So it's one big highway. And Cocos Island is like right in the middle.
Wow. So what about, I know you did some the sharks, the white tip sharks. What is their activity?
Well, white tip sharks are those, you know, sluggish sharks you see most of the time when you're, you know, in these rocky reefs and coastal waters. They're sitting on the bottom. You know, they're one of the few sharks that doesn't have to keep on moving. You know, they can flush their gills and they can sit on the bottom, which is usually how you see them at daytime. And the nighttime, they're a little more active. And, you know, there's always this belief that they're not very migratory, or that they're not migratory, right? And that's basically kind of correct. They tend to be resident once they find an area that they like. But we're actually doing the genetics right now. And there are some population distinctions in the region, but they don't seem to be too great. So there seems to be a lot more genetic flow between these populations than we used to think. They're not that static. There is a lot of mixing going on.
Okay, so there's another question I got to ask you, and we're going to go back to the diving again. But I saw that new shark that they discovered offshore Osa.
Oh, yeah.
What's the deal with that? I mean, well, it looks like a rhino or something. They named it rhino something or other, but...
Yeah, that's a goblin shark. Those are very deep water sharks. And yeah, thousands of meters perhaps. And yeah, they were, I would like to say they cheated because they used a submarine. You know, that's the only way to sample fish like this. You know, you can't really fish them when they're so deep.
No, you can't.
And it's very difficult to access them. And that's why whenever there's availability of this technology, scientists always try to seize the opportunity, because every time you go down there, you know, you don't know what you're going to discover. New species, new habitats. You know, like recently they also discovered a what do you call them? Pulpo? They discovered an octopus rookery.
Oh, wow.
Also way deep in very deep waters, you know, and thousands of little octopus, you know, like little fingerlings all over the place. So, you know, you never know what you're going to discover down there. And yeah, new species and everything. So it's very exciting. And I heard that one of these vessels with submarines is coming again to support scientists.
Oh, yay.
Now in 227. So I'm already lining up. Like, I need your help. I need your help.
help me. That'd be great. You know, when I told you about diving with Bill McDonald, he was on the Calypso 23 years. That was the most wonderful experience of my life because, in fact, the person I'm staying with now, she was Anita's been coming to Costa Rica since 1994 or 5 all the time. And when his wife was very ill, she's passed now, but she was very ill, but they got her to take care of her. So I dove, cause he said, I don't know if anybody, you know, nobody's really, they just do Isla de Coco. Nobody really dives and filmed from the Osa Peninsula all the way to Nicaragua. And so we did that for 6 weeks and it was the most great experience. And he would go, here's this, you're going to be the light person. We go down. And it was one of those amazing experiences of my life. And then he took that video and he did a short film, 10 minutes, one 5 minutes, one 10 minutes, and won awards all over the world. And do you ever see those videos? I'll send them to you when we're off.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think I've seen that.
Oh my gosh. It was like, it changed my life. It really changed my life. Like to be able to dive with him, you know, and you know where I met him. Remember when we had the State of the Oceans event?
Yeah.
And from at the Ramada. His son was there representing the Cousteau Foundation, and his son introduced me to him, and that's how I got to do that. But I met him with you. We remember when we set everybody down at the couch and had everybody at different sides of conservation talk together, and that we did. There were some epic laws and stuff that changed. Things changed at that time. You were there with me with all that.
All right.
We spoke at that event.
It's been a while, yeah.
Been a while, yeah. It was like
been quite a while. How long ago?
And so it's really glad to reconnect with you, and I can't wait to get to Cocos. So let's play that Cocos thing again when you get a chair, Sam, because... So I have a question, and I know probably Blondie's going to have a question, but I have a question about, have you heard about Mel Gibson being the Gulf of Dulce, or is that an urban legend?
I know he has property in Guanacaste in Playa Barrigona.
Okay.
But I don't know about the South.
Well, when I go out with Josh, who's not here today, and I wish he was, but he's doing tours and showing people and educating. This guy, every time I go on a tour with Josh, I'm always like, okay, Josh, don't forget to tell him. You forgot to tell him this. You forgot to tell him that. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm like, he's like, you just want to do this guy tour for me? I'm like, no, but you got to tell him that because that's really cool. But he always, when we go by where Mel's supposed to have a place on the, in Piedras Blancas, he always talks about it. So I just was wanting to know if you'd heard that. But
no, I never heard. And I think he sold his property in Barrigona in Nicoya.
Yeah, he did. I did hear that, yeah. But, That's kind of exciting that happens down the OSA. Do you have a question? Blondie, can you hear me?
You broke up for a second. What did you ask?
Do you have a question for Randall?
Yes. The corridor, the swimway you're talking about?
Yes.
That is so, for people who don't really know what that means, what does that mean? Exactly.
Well, see, now that you ask the question, I have to not confess, but I have to, mention that I haven't really been good at the communicating yet, So, and this is something we really have to do. We have to get this concept out into the politicians' minds, people who like the decision makers, and that's going to happen when people like you and everybody else are also aware, and we push for these changes. But, the swimway is basically a highway where the animals are migrating. So, for instance, you have Cocos Island, you have Galapagos, and you have the schooling hammerhead sharks. So the governments years ago thought it was very important to protect these sites. So both of these sites are protected as no fishing areas, Cocos Island National Park and Galapagos. So that seems to make sense. But now we figured out that Cocos Island and Galapagos are really just the summits of a mountain chain that goes underwater. And some of these summits are only 200 meters or 150 meters deep. And the water all around is 2,500 meters deep. So you have that mountain range and these two summits. And here we are protecting these two summits. But in between these two summits, along this mountain ridge, you have all these other little summits that are called seamounts. And, years ago, we figured out that the animals were following these seamounts going back and forth, and we started calling it a swimway. But back then, we would call it a super highway. Back then, we would imagine that a hammerhead shark would be in Cocos Island and say, I'm going to Galapagos, and he would just cruise down that highway. And we can imagine those seamounts, and the seamount, like with the sign saying, Cocos Island that way, and the animals are just cruising by. But now with our tagging studies, we have figured out that they're going down this swimway. But the swimway is not a highway, but the animals are going from one seamount to another, and they use the seamounts as stepping stones. So they go to one seamount, then they stay there for weeks or months, and then they go to another seamount, then they go back, and they go back and forth. And the most important discovery was made by a student from the University of Costa Rica, Marta Cambra, and she deployed cameras at these seamounts that are 200 meters deep, and she discovered... Wow. That the hammerhead sharks are also schooling on these seamounts in between. So they're not just using these seamounts as stepping stones, but they're also schooling at them. And that's where it really hits you. You can save Cocos Island all you want and Galapagos all you want, but if you allow fishing on those seamounts in between, they're going to fish out your sharks regardless, anyway, no matter how much you protect Cocos and Galapagos. And a good analogy that I heard once was, imagine you have your kids at home. They're safe and you're happy. When your kids are at school, they're safe and they're happy. But what if you have to make your kids walk to school on a road that has no sidewalks and the cars are zapping by back and forth? If anything happens to your kid on the way to school, it doesn't matter how much you protect them at home or at school. If you don't protect them on the road in between, you might lose just as well. And that's what's happening with the sharks. We're protecting Cocos and we're protecting Galapagos, but we need to protect that swimway if we want our conservation efforts to be efficient.
So what do we have to do to do that? So what's going on with that? Because that's important. And how do we get the word out in Costa Rica as well as here?
Well, check out my my website or check out my social media, because we have some big battles coming up. Right now, fishery policy in Costa Rica is taken by the shark fin industry. Even though these are endangered marine species and they should be under the governing body of the Ministry of Environment, in reality in Costa Rica, they're considered commercial species and they're under the governing body of the fishery department.
I've got a question before you go any further. How many years have we been fighting this battle?
Oh, man. And again, it's forever.
Since 2008 or 9 anyway.
Yeah. The worst thing for me is I'm used to fighting with the fishery department, but I usually have a partner in the Ministry of Environment. But since 2017, we don't have friends in the Ministry of the Environment. They're all sold out to the shark fin industry interests. And just to make my point, I have a Supreme Court resolution of 2023 that says that everything Costa Rica has done as far as shark conservation since 2017 has been illegal and continues to be illegal. The Ministry of the Environment should be the governing body over all shark conservation and management. And the Fishery Department can't do anything about it because they're not commercial species. They're endangered species. So we have a state of illegality in Costa Rica. And right now we're suing the government for contempt because they have a mandate.
I have another question.
Not complying with it.
How important is there anything that the U.S. ambassador of Costa Rica, of the United States in Costa Rica, could do to help?
Oh, well, in the current political context, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if they're going to confront the government of Costa Rica.
I know her.
What about everything?
I would love to explore the possibility.
Okay, I know who she is.
Just to show you how bad this is. I just told you how important this swimway is, right? Well, recently, the Costa Rican government finally came out with the management plan on what they're going to do along these seamounts. It's called the Bicentennial Marine Management Area.
Right.
And we look at their proposal, and what they're saying is they're going to allow longline fishing all along that ridge. But they're going to ban longline fishing around the seamounts. So it's like, well, okay, what distance? Okay, 5 miles around the seamounts you can't fish. It's like, that's nothing. When they created the national park, it's 40 nautical miles. Only 5 miles here? And now listen to this. They say, yes, only 5 nautical miles and only below 500 meters.
My gosh.
Nobody fishes below 500
Nobody
meters.
Fishes that low.
All that's, longline activity
that's
happens
corruption.
On the surface.
I can say so, that's 100% corruption.
It's 100% corruption. And then you look at the authors of this management plan. The director of the longline industry, Mauricio
Gonzalez. Of course they are.
He's one of the scientists who came up with this plan. And, you know, so of course we're waiting because now they say we have to wait for the fisheries management plan. And, yeah, we're going to sue. We're not going to let this
hold
water. And again, that's where folks like you or the public opinion comes in very handy. You know, when we can tell these politicians, this is absurd. Banning fishing below 500 meters, you might as well ban longline fishing on the moon and call that a victory.
Right. I know. She's Blondie's with us on all this. That's why she's here today. She believes in everything we believe in. And everything we know to be true. That's what we're going to talk. Everything we know. I mean, I mean, I'm talking like 9, 8, 18, 9, 21, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 18 years. And it has, it's gotten worse in 18 years, hasn't it?
It's gotten worse. It's gotten worse because, like I said, I used to be able to work with the Ministry of Environment. I always had my discussions with the Fishery Department. But before 2017, and under the regulations of the Wildlife Conservation Law, there were public consultation and participation laws which made me unavoidable. You know, I was part of
commissions. Yeah, I know. You've always been unavoidable since I've known you. And that's why when I was on the radio, it was like, Randall, you were always there.
Yeah, but you know, what happened after 2017 was, you know, before there was no way getting around me because there were public interest laws, which allowed me to participate in these conventions and meetings. And I had a voice when these decisions were made, just as a citizen and as a scientist. It's called transparency. It's called democracy.
Yeah.
Well, as of 2017, they said sharks aren't wildlife. So now the government of Costa Rica gets to cherry pick which NGOs work in our commissions and which ones don't. So, for instance, before, when I used to work on these commissions with the government, I was voted in by the NGO sector. The NGOs would get together and say, okay, we have a seat in the National Shark Action Plan, you know, for an NGO. So you do a vote, and they would vote for me to be the member, you know, and that's the way it works. You know, if it's going to be forestry or whatever, the NGOs choose who their scientists or who their expert's going to be in these commissions or in these councils. But now when they change that, it's all under Incopesca. So now there's no transparency. There's no democracy. But Incopesca says, we're going to allow NGOs. And then they allow their favorite NGO, the ones that they know that aren't going to raise any hell.
And the Incopesca is the fishing industry. So it's all landed one way and it's not going anywhere.
Exactly. Well, you know, and that's the tragedy of this all. You know, I can get the fishermen in the sense that, you know, fishing is bad right now. It's declined dramatically because of what we're fishing. And they have to feed their families. And lots of these guys have loans that they have to pay at the end of the month. So when you talk to them about sustainability and management, they don't really want to hear it because they have immediate needs because of the overfishing situation. You know, so I can get where they're coming from. But when you're a politician and you have to make these decisions for sustainability, thinking in the future so that we don't run out of these things or these products within the next decade or so, you have to have a different mind. But if you're just going to say, oh, a poor fisherman, he's going to eat. I don't care about sustainability. I don't care if there's too many boats. I don't care if they're fishing in a protected area. I don't care if they're fishing protected species. Then nothing gets accomplished. And that's what's happening. You know, we cannot let these guys rule and determine their own policy, because then there's a conflict of interests. You know, it's a public resource. These resources are as much mine as they are theirs. And if they're going to exploit them, they have to exploit them according to the rules with licenses. But if they're not doing that, they're affecting me, they're affecting you, they're affecting the whole society.
They're affecting the planet. They're affecting Costa Rica's livelihood.
Exactly, you know.
They're killing their own country.
You know, they always tell me that I'm an enemy of the fishermen. You know, and I think the enemy of the fishermen are the politicians who establish fishery policy, because they're the ones putting them in this spot. For instance, I always told them as well when I'm talking with some fishermen, would you invest in a business if I tell you that invest and you're going to lose 10% annually for the next 10 years until this resource is gone? Would you invest in a business like that?
No.
Well, that's what they're doing when they're investing on catching and commercializing endangered species. They're endangered because of fishing. It ain't going to get any better if you keep on fishing them, or at least restrict the fishing. But everything they do is to continue the fishing unabated because they have to eat today. And, you know, so this is, you know, that's the problem.
Todd Staley kind of had the thing, you know, it's like he didn't mind the sport fit, you know, going out and doing whatever. Remember, he was a good asset in those days before he passed. Todd Staley from
Todd Staley.
Osa.
Todd was fantastic. He was right on your side.
He was next to you on everything that you did. You know, he was right there.
Todd was fantastic. And I love him. Us environmentalists and sport fishers, we have some differences, but we are kind of like natural allies. You know,
exactly.
Because because we both depend on a sustainable ocean, you know, and I don't have any problem with people eating fish or anything like that. It's just, we have to do it the right way. And when I see,
exactly,
you know, people selling shark ceviche, like, what are you guys doing?
I don't, I don't understand that. I don't understand.
What do you think it was in 2017 that changed, that changed so much?
Well, this goes all the way back to 2013. See, back in, during the government of Lara Chinchilla,
yeah,
I met with her when she started, and I convinced her that Costa Rica could do great things for the ocean. And I convinced her to close down these private docks because there were Taiwanese shark finners landing other shark fins in Punta Arenas. I got her to shut that down. She gave us a lot of support. And then I told her in 2013, why don't we protect hammerhead sharks at the international convention called CITES?
Yes.
This way we can, mm-hmm, give international protection to these sharks, and Costa Rica can be the leader, you know, the natural leader that it is. And we went to, mm-hmm, CITES, and back then we went under the wildlife conservation law. So I was part of the CITES scientific committee from the Ministry of the Environment, and we went to CITES, and we won. Costa Rica led the process. It was a huge battle because it's 188 nations. You have to win by a 2/3 majority vote, and we won by 5 votes. So we just barely won. Huge celebration. Costa Rica came back to back home being, you know, the champions. But then when we started implementing the convention, and the longline industry didn't like that. And slowly and slowly, they started figuring out how to circumvent these regulations. And they figured it out in 2017. Let's just declare sharks are commercial species. And if they're commercial species, then this way we strip the Ministry of Environment of their authority. That way they can't use the wildlife conservation law anymore. And now the fishery department is the authority here, is the governing body. And we use the fishery law. And the fishery law doesn't even say the word conservation anywhere. So, you know, so now they moved everything from a framework that had all the transparency and all the democracy in the processes, and they moved all the authority to an institute that makes all these unilateral decisions based on whatever the shark fin longline industry wants. I don't know how they got that powerful, but what really makes me wonder is how do they convince people?
Corruption did it.
Yeah, but what really makes me wonder is how do they get people to be ministers of environment, but then tell them you have to forget about sharks, even though there's a mandate, and even though it's what you're supposed to do, and that's what the law says, you're going to ignore sharks. And they say, okay, as long as I get the job.
It's sad.
That's the tragedy.
It's disgusting. You know, it's disgusting.
That's Costa Rica for you.
Well, I think it's the whole world, by the way.
It's the whole world, definitely. It's,
yeah.
You know, if I lived in some other country, like, I'm sure I'd be exposing the same corruption, the same BS.
Me too. And now I'm in Costa Rica. Oh, I'll be back in Costa Rica in August. I'm not staying the whole time. I got here and I can't. This is horrible. I got here. My mom's fine. Everything's going well. And I spent about 3 or 4 days up here. I've been here since June the 4th. And I was going to stay till December. Uh-uh. Jana's going back home. My puppy misses me.
Right.
I can't wait. I'm
going to be there by the first part of August. And then we're going to Isla de Coco. I'm so excited.
Nice.
You know how long that's been on my bucket list? As long as I can, as soon as I started diving. And then I heard about the Isla de Coco thing, and I have to go. That's just been the thing I wanted to do. And I was like Kim hawing around, is what we say in Texas. And my girlfriend that's here that I'm staying with, she's like, do it. You got to go. You have to do it. I'm like, okay. She goes, will you just go? So I'm doing it. And I'm so excited. That's all I can think about, to be honest.
All right. You're going to enjoy it. It's going to be a good
going
one.
On. So tell us how people can sign up for those.
Okay, well, just send me an email message.
Okay, and let's
my
give
email
that
there.
Email.
Yeah, just if you're interested in signing up, I just need a small deposit for right now, and you can finish paying.
And so what's the email? Let's do that 3 times. Give your email really slow 3 times.
Okay. It's my name is Randall Arauz. So the email is R. Arauz, R-A-R-A-U-Z,
Right, there you go.
Rawls. Okay. At
Gmail, what is it?
At marinewatch.org.
That marinewatch.org. R Arouse, ARAUZ at marinewatch.org.
There you
and,
go.
And then how can they search for you online?
Just punch my name in. If you go to Google and punch my name
Arouse,
in.
Arouse? Okay. Oh, yeah, you can find all that. Or marinewatch.org. Or marinewatch.
Instagram and on Facebook. Just that right now, I usually just do Instagram, and then I post everything automatically on Facebook. So Instagram is better right now.
I know, Instagram. So you're R Arouse on Instagram?
Yes. Well, I try to be. I'm trying to get up to 5,000.
All right. That's great. Okay, so wait a minute. We have like, I think, Sam, like 3 minutes left. Let's run that ad one more time, that his video of his amazing tour that Jungle Jana is going to be on, and we will be doing radio in L.A. from there, right?
Come with Jana. Come with Jana to Coco's.
Come to Jana with Coco's, por favor. Okay, let's play that one more. Yeah, and so you know Francisco Nistre, see?
No, I don't know. I know of him, but I don't know.
You know
him.
From Diving Mania. That's where I learned to dive, and I went nuts when I learned to dive.
Yeah, Francesco.
Yes.
Diving Mania. Yeah, I know him very well.
He's a great guy.
My kids.
Yeah, and he taught Oscar's the guy that actually taught me. But I lived in the house. I was okay. So you know Jill Payer.
Jill Paez, oh yeah, she's famous. Yeah,
and her I rented a house from them, but we shared a garage. And she was a trip. And her daddy loves me so much. I stayed there in Romester for like 4 years, so he was just right up the street. That's why I learned to dive. But I've got one lady interested, and her and I would dive together. You know, every time we'd go off and dive together all the time. She lives in Romester as well. She's going to let me know. She may be coming with us. And we would go off and we'd be dive partners, right? You always have one with you. And then we would always didn't use much air, right? I'm really good, and so is she. And everybody's in the boat, and we just have to put that little float thing up at the top, say we're way over here.
Right, the MSB.
kind of go up on our own, and because we could dive. I mean, here's my thing that I'm really proud about, and I don't know how nitrox works, but I would every time I've ever been diving. When I come up, I have more air than any person that's guiding the tour. But I learned how to do the breathing. But is nitrox the same?
Nitrox is the same, yeah.
You just have to breathe that because I can go in and out. And I just love it when I'm going up and I'm with all these men and I'm like, hey, look how much air I got. I could have stayed
down. No, you really can't really tell the difference with nitrox, but when you go diving at other places and you do repeated dives, if you're not using nitrox, you do feel it. Like, man, why am I so sore?
You don't feel that with nitrox. That's what my friend told me that he does dives with nitrox. He probably wants to come in the next tour.
Him and his wife.
Yeah. I got people in Texas, and I've got Carol Petrolia. I've got to call her. She may be coming. She's interested too, so I'm working it. But we're going to be doing radio on LA Talk. From Coco's Island. Sam, are we out of time? It looks like we are. I don't know. I know it's supposed to be 50 minutes.
Yeah. But I got to go anyway because I have to get ready for another meeting.
Yeah, you got to go for another meeting. So we'll talk to you later. And we'll be coming back next week because I think Janita's coming back.
Sure. I'll be around.
Oh, man, I love having you on. You know, we did we had all those fun radio times. Bye, guys. We'll make your call.
Okay.
See you later.
Thanks, Randall.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay. See ya.
Bye-bye. Thank
you. You're listening to Jungle Jana Radio with Jungle Jana and Angel Garcia only on LA Talk Radio.